My okay. Something to hurt my.
And then I've got a red one in my pocketbook.
I know. Yalla, habibi.
Yeah. That's not cotton.
Mm-hmm. Yalla, see you in 1 hour or less. At least.
Something
that's
stuck. Oh, can you hear me?
I love this. Why is this on the floor? I love it.
Oh, right. I just pulled it out. Please, I just found please. It.
Yalla, habibi. Need anything? You have your drink? Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, that'll be good. And if the papayas don't look good, don't worry about it.
What?
Martha? Martha, can you mute? Thank you. I need...
Okay, so I'm here. Hello.
Hi there.
I'm back.
Yes, hey. Long time not see, Mahala. We're here a little early, so we can we'll give everybody a couple minutes to get here.
Sure.
And then we'll start on time.
And then I share my screen, right, for the slides. Okay.
Yep. Yep. You have make sure you have share screen. If not, I'll make you host.
I do.
Okay, cool. And we'll record it and all those fun things.
Okay.
Hey, Patty. And I responded to those messages. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Let me mute my phone.
That's a good idea. Glad you said that out loud. Thank you. All right. I hope everybody's having a good day. Mine's nuts.
This week needs to be over for you.
You have no idea.
You said last night that you were having a bad week. I'm sorry.
You have no idea.
It always gets better. Okay.
I know. And in fact, I just read an email from Steph and she said the same thing. She's like, it'll get better. So obviously I needed to hear that today. Thank you.
Yes. Multiple times.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So
is it things that are out of your control or that you kind of maybe?
It's kind of a continuation from yesterday.
Okay. Well, I claim it over with.
Yeah, I like that. But our call went well, so.
I thought so too.
It was, I actually enjoy small group. I like them. I like doing them.
I had no idea what it would be like, and I went in thinking I'm going to like it, and I did. It was nice. I mean, it was a lot different than the Dr. Rita Marie calls. Even though we get to know each other on that, I felt like I was more part of it because I was one of the leaders.
Yeah. It's a real different feel. I think doing small group, like I said, I like them, and some of the calls are, and as we get to know the group better, it's going to be even more fun and we'll get a lot more out of it. So, all right, it's 5 or 6 or 4 or whatever. It's the o'clock,
yep.
Depending on where you are. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. And if we get, because I know Dr. Reed Marie's got a call that's starting in a little bit, and some of you might want to hit that. So we're going to go ahead and get started and get on with things. I will ask, as Mahala's doing her presentation, if we all could mute, I will be as well. Please feel free to put questions in the chat. And we'll get to those at the end of the presentation. Okay. You ready, Mahala?
Yep.
Okay, cool. So Mahala has been trained traditionally as a pharmacist and received her doctorate degree from the University of Southern California. She has practiced clinical pharmacy, like as a hospital pharmacist, and she's done research pharmacy, where she was part of a team that ran clinical trials to ensure safety and the efficacy of drugs. She saw a number of drugs come to the market, but she's also seen a number of drugs being pulled off the market. Once she took a deeper dive and did research on functional medicine, she started educating people on the real safety of using drugs and drug nutrient interactions. So, Mahala, take it away. Thank you.
Great. So let's thank you for the introduction. Hi, everyone. Good evening. And let me share my screen. All right. So basically, as Annette said, everybody can see my screen. Is it there?
Yeah, it's there. It's pretty.
Okay. So where should I put it? I'll put it here. So I worked pretty much half of my career as a hospital pharmacist, which basically allowed me to see into the hospital with 20, 30 drugs. And I was that pharmacist that was giving one big pill. Like every prescription that I would receive, it would be for 20, 30 drugs. And I always wondered, like, how do these people end up on so many drugs? At that time, I thought that it was something that the patients were doing, that they probably didn't follow the right diet, probably, they messed up. I was thinking in my head as I was filling those prescriptions and sending them up to the floor. Here to the right, we also have the pharmacist kind of telling the patient, yeah, your prescription was for this medication, but this medication causes nausea, for which I'm giving you yet another drug, and that drug will cause temporary blindness. So now I'm giving you another drug for that, and so on and so forth. And the patient is going like, what? And quite frankly, that's how the hospital prescriptions were. Like, the patient would be admitted for something and we would get, all right, but if the patient gets nausea, give them this medication. If the patient gets fever, you give them some Tylenol. If the patient gets pain, you give them some ibuprofen. If they get constipated, you give them this. If they blah, blah, blah. And so that's supposed to be funny, but it's really not, because it's really happening in real life. And so let's go over side of, like, a little bit of terminology. Like, what is side effects? What are side effects? And side effects are pretty much, by definition, just an effect that was not expected. But that doesn't mean that side effect has to be a bad thing. It can be a good thing. So just for example, a classic situation is Viagra. Viagra reduces pulmonary tension, blood pressure. And so Viagra is actually one of the main drugs used in pulmonary hypertension. And that's something that they came across because of side effects. When they realized that that's the profile, they thought, well, let's see if it works in this situation. And it did. So then, because of this, the general consent is, well, let's not talk about side effects, because those can be good. Let's talk about adverse drug reactions. And a drug reaction is a response to a drug which is unintended and occurs at normal doses. So it doesn't have to be an overdose. And so that's the definition of now an adverse drug reaction. But then we also hear all the time about adverse drug events. Well, the adverse drug event is an injury, where the adverse drug reaction could have been just something like nausea. So it's, the patient wasn't really injured, but an adverse drug event causes an injury, and that usually can lead to either the patient going to ER. Sometimes the patient gets admitted in the hospital for further treatment, and sometimes the patient dies. So adverse drug events sometimes can be caused by overdoses, not just regular doses. So, and also medication errors. You gave the wrong drug, you gave the wrong dose, you know, wrong indication, all kinds of medication errors, where the adverse drug reactions were not caused by medication errors ever. So just to go a little bit over some statistics, adverse drug events cause about 1.3 million emergency department visits per year, and about 350,000 of those patients per year need to be hospitalized for further treatment after emergency visits for adverse drug events. Adverse drug events are the third leading cause of death in the United States. And to put it in perspective, that's after heart disease and cancer. So that's kind of scary. So just to rehash side effects, now we call them adverse drug reactions may lead to an adverse drug event, but not always. By my definition, there's noticeable side effects, and these are side effects like nausea and drowsiness, and these are the side effects that when you open a package insert, they're there. You go to drugs.com, they're there. But there's also lesser known side effects, and these are the nutrient deficiencies caused by these drugs. And these are often not mentioned in the package insert. And the reason for that has to do with clinical trials. Just to put in perspective, a phase one clinical trial usually has about 10 to 20 patients in it. Phase two deals with safety and efficacy, and now the numbers might go up to maybe 100 patients in the study. Phase three also looks at safety, continues to look at safety and definitely efficacy. And phase three clinical trials are, they can reach up to 2,000-3,000 patients in a study. But when you put it in perspective to how big the population out there is, statistically speaking, it's very hard to capture rare side effects, whether they are not bad side effects, but just rare, or really bad side effects, but also rare. And so after the drug comes to the market, they go into what's called post-marketing phase, and that's phase four. And during that time, there's websites where patients and doctors alike can go and report side effects that they noticed while taking these medications. Side effects that are not listed in the package insert. And so this is the time when we capture things like nutrient deficiencies, because these are more, they happen quite seldom, but also what happens if in a clinical trial, somebody doesn't make a conscious decision to say, well, let me look at the zinc levels, or let me look for the vitamin B12 levels, that doesn't get captured unless it gets captured into post-marketing. And so that's why these drugs are not mentioned in the package insert, but they might be captured in case reports and things like that. All right, I don't know what's going on with my website. I mean, with my thing, I had some pretty pictures here, but they're not showing, but you can see the rest. So that's important. So according to Susan Cohen, which is also a pharmacist, and she wrote the book, Drug Muggers, which medications are robbing your body of essential nutrients. She says that 50% of the drugs approved in the US commonly deplete nutrients. And about 30% of those side effects from medications are related to drug-induced nutrient deficiencies. So that's pretty serious. Here I had a pretty picture with a house being built, but basically what I'm trying to say is just the way, just because you have concrete and wood and you don't have nails and glues to keep those together, same way the human body, besides the fact that it needs carbs and proteins and fats, all that will not, eventually will still lead to disease if you do not have enough vitamins and minerals. These are the nails and the glues and the things that keep the carbs and proteins and fats together and makes the cells, rejuvenate the cells and makes them be born and basically leads to health and life. So there's few mechanisms for nutrient depletions. One, the drug can simply bind to those minerals and vitamins and then they get eliminated without even being absorbed. Then the gastrointestinal acidity has an effect on drugs, but also the supplements, the nutrient absorption. So there's drugs that basically mess with the acidity in our stomach. And for example, you need a lot of acid in the gut to absorb zinc. So if the acidity is too low because somebody is on antacid, that zinc, even if you're eating a diet full of zinc, really nutritious, you're not going to absorb that. And then there's enzymes that transport nutrients around the body. And so those enzymes can be inhibited by drugs. And so here we can think of if a certain vitamin gets absorbed from the gut into the bloodstream, it still needs to be delivered to the cell level. And so if that doesn't happen, even if you absorbed it from the gut, you're still going to be deficient in that nutrient. And then there's other enzymes that are involved in activating nutrients. And just like we know about prodrugs that you give them and then they have to be cleaved in a certain way to give you the active drug, in the same way vitamins are given. So for example, most of the times, if you buy vitamin B12 from the store, so if you go to CVS Pharmacy, Walgreens, even Sprouts or Whole Foods, you have to pay attention because if you buy a vitamin B12, it might be in the form of a cyanocobalamin. Well, that's not an active form of vitamin B12. The active form is the methylcobalamin. And so once that gets absorbed, assuming it gets absorbed, it goes from the bloodstream into the plasma. Now all these enzymes have to come and cleave off the cyano group. Now you get the cyanocobalamin, and then you have to attach a methyl group to it to make methylcobalamin, which is the active ingredient, right? And so the active vitamin. And so if this process doesn't happen because you are nutrient deficient, even though you absorbed that cyanocobalamin, that's not going to do anything for your health. All right, I'm not sure what's going on with my slides. They worked a few seconds ago, but let's see. Basically, I'm not sure, do you want me to try to jumpstart this somehow, or I can just talk?
I would, if they've all disappeared, but you know what's there, then I would go ahead and talk.
Okay. So it looks like all the pictures are gone, so that's what's going on. So basically, in this talk, I'm going to address antihypertensive drugs, blood pressure medications, and how they, what kind of nutrients they deplete. And also we are going to talk about diabetes medications and what kind of nutrients they are depleting. And so let's go over the blood pressure drugs. The ACE inhibitors, these are drugs like the captopril, enalapril, quinapril, all the prils basically. These are very popular drugs. They're probably the first line of therapy after the diuretics. And they deplete things like sodium, potassium, zinc, calcium, phosphorus, magnesium, and coenzyme Q10. And you'll notice that I highlighted magnesium and coenzyme Q10. And the reason is that I want you to observe a trend. And then we will be talking about magnesium and coenzyme Q10 towards the end. Then there's the angiotensin receptor blockers, drugs like irbesartan, losartan, valsartan. They all have the same ending, sartan. So this also depletes magnesium and coenzyme Q10, as well as zinc, magnesium, and calcium. There's the beta blockers, atenolol, metoprolol, timolol. They deplete coenzyme Q10 and melatonin. And then there's the calcium channel blockers, the nifedipine, verapamil, diltiazem, and amlodipine. And they also deplete coenzyme Q10 and magnesium along with the other ones, vitamin D and calcium and potassium. And then there's the there's three types of diuretics. The most common ones are the loop diuretics. These are drugs like furosemide, also known as Lasix. There's the bumetidine or Bumex. And they also deplete a lot. Like magnesium, they deplete a bunch of B1, B6, vitamin C, potassium, calcium, sodium, and zinc. Quite a list. And then there's the thiazide diuretics, which the most popular one is the hydrochlorothiazide. And this one depletes also magnesium and coenzyme Q10. And hydrochlorothiazide is a diuretic that can be given by itself, but quite often is actually in combination drugs. In the name of patient compliance, a lot of antihypertensives have been combined with hydrochlorothiazide. So the patient doesn't have to swallow two pills, they can swallow just one. And so it's very, very common to be in the drug regimen along with the other ones. And then there's the potassium sparing diuretics, which that's exactly what they do. They spare the potassium, which the other ones do not. Spironolactone is the most common one. And this is a drug that lately has been used quite extensively in PCOS patients because it helps with acne. And so this drug also depletes magnesium. So as I said, I'm gonna go over the highlighted, so I'm gonna talk about magnesium right now. And the question is, well, what's so great about magnesium? Other than the fact that it's part of more than 300 biochemical reactions in the body. It also regulates the blood pressure by the same mechanism as the calcium channel blocker drugs that we mentioned a few minutes ago, except that it has less side effects or no side effects. And so it's known as the nature's calcium channel blocker. Low magnesium, though, can cause high blood pressure. And so we give calcium channel blockers to treat hypertension, but we deplete magnesium, and now low magnesium can cause high blood pressure. So it's a vicious cycle. And low magnesium can lead to high blood sugar. Let's see if these pictures are here. Nope, they're not here. Basically, I was just going over, pointing out this vicious cycle that you give them medication to treat hypertension, but you get low magnesium, which then will cause hypertension or high blood sugar, for which then you're going to give more medications, you're going to get more side effects, for which you're going to give more drugs, and so on and so forth. And I believe that your prescription drugs, if there's no mechanism to balance the nutrients, that might be the reason why you keep staying sick. Because it would make sense that if you have hypertension and you have been given a medication for hypertension, you should be feeling better and getting better, right? And instead, you kind of never get better. And more often than not, you're going to end up on the second drug and the third drug for the same reason. And eventually, you're going to come down with diabetes and some other diseases. Oh, there it is. I don't know what happened to my slides. And then I had a picture just to show food sources for magnesium. And magnesium is quite, it's present in a lot of foods, including in some meats and seafoods, but also in nuts and seeds. So it's quite easy to eat a diet that's rich in magnesium. So unless you're on the sad American diet, the magnesium levels should be quite good. But there's also the problem that our soil is depleted. So I always recommend patients that are on certain drugs that deplete magnesium to really supplement with a supplement, not just with being careful with the diet. So here I'm going to mention that I'm going to talk about diabetes. And the most common drug, the common class of diabetes drugs is the sulfonylureas. And these are the glyburide, glipizide, glimepiride. And they are pretty much the first line of therapy. Although sometimes metformin can be given first, but I see it more often that the doctors try this class of drugs first. And they deplete coenzyme Q10 and vitamin B12. And so now think about it. If you are on a bunch of antihypertensives, quite a few of them were depleting coenzyme Q10, and now you're adding the diabetic drugs and you're going to deplete some more coenzyme Q10. And vitamin B12 is also super important, and we're going to talk about both of this. And then there's the metformin, which also depletes coenzyme Q10 and vitamin B12, along with vitamin E, B9, and B6. And then there's the insulin, which depletes DHEA, which we know that it can mess your hormones. And I don't remember what was there, but yeah, so what's the point of vitamin B12? Why do we even care about it? Other than the fact that it protects the nerves and the brain cells from free radicals. It's shown to reduce pain associated with neuropathy. It contributes to the healthy DNA and RNA in the human genetic material. So that's quite a job. And it works with our other B vitamins to form red blood cells, to support the immune system, to improve the mood and the cardiovascular system, and maintain overall energy levels. And if you don't have enough of it, you're going to be super tired. You're going to have digestive issues, nausea. Even menstruation will be affected, and some women completely lose their menstruation. And for advanced symptoms, meaning long-term probably, is nerve pain. So if you've been diabetic and you develop nerve pain, we now know that the first place to look at is vitamin B12 deficiency. But it can also cause mental health issues and infertility, and it can impair your immune system and cause anemia. So B12 is one of those vitamins that is not very rich in vegetables. And so it's mostly present in meats, organ meats, a little bit in oats and some mushrooms. But that's one reason why people, when they go for a vegan diet, I always recommend, especially if they're on these drugs, any of them, I recommend that they periodically check for their B12 level and supplement as needed. And so now we're going to talk about coenzyme Q10. And coenzyme Q10 assists hundreds of enzymatic reactions. And it makes energy by sparking the production of energy molecule ATP. And so without ATP, we would have absolutely no energy to even make our regular processes, biochemical processes work. And so definitely we would feel super tired. Coenzyme Q10 is famous for its role in heart health, including congestive heart failure. And there's one congestive heart failure specialist, an MD, that he reports that when he gets new patients, the first thing he does, he looks for their coenzyme Q10 level. And more often than not, these patients have very low levels of coenzyme Q10. And then he replenishes that. And once he does that, a lot of times congestive heart failure symptoms go away, or at least they improve tremendously. So the quality of life is there. So that's quite amazing. And then it's also a powerful antioxidant. It protects the cells from DNA damage. So it might have some kind of role in cancer prevention. So when we don't have enough vitamin coenzyme Q10, we could get heart failure, possibly cancer, but we do know that it can cause hypertension and diabetes. Bummer. None of the pictures are showing up. So there's also food sources, and coenzyme Q10 is though quite, so vegetables, a lot of vegetables are really rich in coenzyme Q10, also meats. And so it really, if you have a clean diet, rich in fiber, proteins, you should really get quite enough coenzyme Q10. But again, if you are on any of these drugs, I would supplement in addition to the diet, just because these days a lot of foods are not that rich in the vitamins as they used to be. So just to be cautious. All right, so here I had a chart that was showing how many nutrient deficiencies were contributing to diabetes. And so it's, I'm sorry, you guys do not get to see it. And then I was showing the Krebs cycle and to see in how many spots do you need either magnesium, coenzyme Q10, or vitamin B12 for the Krebs cycle to complete. And the Krebs cycle is basically the energy making cycle. That's where we make ATP, and then that ATP goes into the another cycle that basically multiplies that energy. And so, and that other cycle is really dependent on coenzyme Q10. And so if you do not have enough of these nutrients, you probably are going to be super, super tired and barely making it through the day, not to mention developing all kinds of infections and all kinds of chronic disease. And so it's very important to let ourselves get the right medicine. Is this the pills that we need or a really good nutrition diet? And my point of view is that drugs are needed, and especially if you have some kind of trauma, by all means, we need medications. But the point of the medications should be to basically stabilize the patient and then to give us some time to look for the root cause. Long-term medications will most likely put us into a nutrient deficiency cycle. And I think these are the charts that I was mentioning, the Krebs cycle. And unfortunately, in our society, most patients will opt to go for the drugs and the surgeries, and they want everything to work fast. Like, you know, the moment they get the drug, they want to feel better. But the reality is that it's much better to go for the nutrition and for the lifestyle changes. And sometimes even that is not enough if we are stressed, because stress can really deprive us of a lot of nutrients. And so sometimes it's good to take those medications together with, you know, a dose of relaxation somewhere by the beach or whatever you enjoy, if you like the mountains or whatever that is. So that's what I had for you today. And so if there's any questions, I can take them now.
Thank you, Mihaela. So sorry the slides didn't work.
I know, I don't know what happened.
I was gonna ask you what you did Canva. Okay, I haven't figured it out.
It was Canva, and I went through the slides a few times, and including today, two times.
Okay. And I realized I didn't introduce myself. My name's Annette, and I'm one of the lead coaches for ERC. So Gina has her hand up. Gina, if you want to, I have no controls, so you'll have to unmute yourself. And go ahead, Gina.
Okay, I have a question on taking supplements, even if you're not taking any of the medications, like the CoQ10. Do you have recommendations on the dosage? Like, there's so many of them out there. Like, there's 300, there's 100, things like that. And the same with magnesium.
Yeah, so usually with magnesium, the kind of consensus is that 400 milligrams is about right. However, it really depends what your level is intracellularly. And so it's very important for your doctor to measure your blood level, not just the blood level, the red blood cell level, or even there's labs out there that look inside the white blood cell. So, and if you're super depleted, you can be more aggressive. And especially with magnesium, the way you're going to know that you're going overboard, you're going to get diarrhea. Magnesium salts, there's various salts out there. And some of them act as laxatives, more or less. So, for example, magnesium oxide will be a pure laxative, where magnesium glycinate is not. You'll get much more absorption out of it. So like maybe 20-30%, where the magnesium oxide only about 4% gets absorbed, the rest stays in the gut and acts as a laxative. So again, when I say 400 milligrams, that's more like just the magnesium part of it, not the salt. And also it's very important which type of salt you're taking. The magnesium citrate would be something that people that are constipated would like to go for, where the magnesium glycinate would be for people that tend to have diarrhea. And so, so there's a lot of variables here. So it's kind of hard to give a dose.
Okay, because that's what I'm trying to figure out in my body right now. Because I'm taking supplements and I get diarrhea at times. So I'm like, where is that coming from?
Yeah. So that could be the type of magnesium you're taking. It could be like, oh, another thing that you can do is spread the dose throughout the day. So instead of taking it all at once, mm-hmm. take it in 2, 3, 4 divided doses. And also maybe you have enough magnesium in your body and your magnesium just doesn't get absorbed because your body just doesn't want it. But that's where the labs would come in.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Catherine, you're up.
Hello. Thanks. Thanks for doing this. This is really interesting. Questions for you. So if you're taking any of the medications you went through today, and you suspect those depletions, what's the best timing for taking those kinds of supplements? And how do you know you're taking enough, since a lot of blood tests don't give you great accurate results? But in specific with the timing, I mean, is it best to take the B vitamins, the zinc, et cetera, at the same time as you're taking those drugs? Or should you separate them or what?
I don't think it makes a difference, because ultimately you just don't want to get depleted. So if it's, let's say if you're on 5 drugs and 5 supplements, and it's easier to, you know, it's kind of annoying to swallow that many pills. So you could split it up, right? So it's more comfortable. If you don't care and you're like, get it over with, so I don't have to think about it all day, get it over with. So I don't think it will make a difference. Sometimes there are interactions. But that will depend from drug to drug. And in the ones that I talked about, they will have any interaction with the magnesium or the zinc or the coenzyme Q10, B12. So you could have either a multivitamin and take it along. Definitely diet is always key, because sometimes when we eat bad, it's almost like, you know, we are sabotaging ourselves. So it's like you need a diet, but you also need the extra supplements. And how do you know when you took too much? Well, that's where the labs come in. And there are labs, as I mentioned, that look intracellularly to see your levels. Also, the organic acid testing also gives you an idea about your B vitamins and their levels, and vitamin C, I believe, they give you. And so there's various labs that you can do to actually get an idea. What, first of all, you want to know, do they even get absorbed? Because quite often we do take things and they don't get absorbed. We just spend money and, you know, we get nauseous from them, but it's not helping us. And so there are times when we really need to figure out, are we absorbing them? And if we are not, why not? And work on that. And then in the meanwhile, so let's say if somebody has severe leaky gut or some sort of gut issue that they really are not absorbing, you can actually get IVs with those vitamins temporarily until you fix the gut. And many times you cannot fix the gut if you don't have enough minerals. So like, you need zinc to make acid, but you need acid to absorb zinc. So it's, you know, so you need to work with your doctor to figure out, are you absorbing them? And if you're not, why not? And kind of, again, look for the root cause.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. And could I ask you one more question, which is about B vitamins? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on B complexes versus handpicking individual B vitamins? I've heard pros and cons. I'd love your thoughts on that.
Well, the idea with the B complex, and I think it makes sense, is that, but not if they are all artificial, so they are like made in a chemistry lab I don't think that's really helping. But if you get a big complex from vegetables and organ meats and things like that, you have the intrinsic factor, and you have other factors there that will help with the absorption, but also balancing them. Because just because some, you know, we talk about vitamins, that doesn't mean they're always good. If you have too much of a thing, it's also not good. And so when you give just one vitamin, like let's say you do just B12, many times, first of all, B12 really needs intrinsic factor. Also, it needs B9 to be given together. And so if you have a big complex, you might have all of them. And so the absorption can be, not necessarily the absorption, but the function will be better. So I usually tend to recommend a multivitamin that has all of them. And then if there is some kind of deficiency of one B vitamin, that then also take that one individually.
Great, thank you, I appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay. Anybody else have questions, comments? Speak up, raise your hand.
This is Martha, I have a question.
Sure.
With different family members, I've gone to the doctor with them and asked about like using ginseng for someone that had, that was on some brain medicine, I forgot, you know, for Alzheimer's, I forgot what it was called now, and then mentioned to the doctor for another family member about shouldn't we take B12 for, you know, taking the metformin, and they just, both of them just fluffed me off. You know, as a course of action. And sometimes you can't just change somebody else's doctor for them. Do you have any recommendations for maybe a more different approach? I know that they are really time bound to seeing so many patients in a day. And, you know, the one with the prescribing the metformin said, sure, go ahead and take it. Doesn't matter. And that's what they said about the ginseng. Doesn't matter, there was not enough research, and I just said 5,000 years, that's not enough. Okay, so yeah. Do you have, you know, you don't want to go against somebody's instructions that their doctor's given them, but at the same time, when you know you have Susie Cohen and you saying that, you know, there's research saying that there's a depletion, what, how do you address that with the physician or whoever your caregiver is?
So you can go on PubMed and do research. That's what I would do, especially if you know that the doctor tends to be more like, well, there's no research, there's no evidence. I would give him the evidence and I would be like, this is what I found, this trial, this is what they looked at, this were their results, and what do you think? Could we go with something like that for my mother or for my sister or whatever? And usually if you give them evidence, they might be reading it. I don't know. I think it will vary from doctor to doctor, but when I was working in the hospital, if I would give them evidence, like if I would have to call the doctor, and at that time I was always calling the doctor for drugs, not for supplements, so it's a little bit different, but many times they prescribe off label, and so we would have arguments about that, and if I would bring them evidence about what I was talking about, then they could say, well, this is what I'm basing my ideas on. And they could share something that I didn't know about. And so so I think that if you'd actually give them a study, they'll just be like, oh, okay, I'll prescribe that, or, you know, and then they might actually read it at home.
So they like something like PubMed, okay.
Yes, PubMed, if that's what they like. They like, okay. PubMed.
Thank you. Thank you. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Okay, Rob, you're next. I saw your hand go up first. If you can.
Hi. I just have a quick question.
Sure.
I noticed on your slides that a lot of these drugs deplete CoQ10.
Mm-hmm.
Yet on blood tests, they don't really measure CoQ10. So how do you know if you're depleting that?
So they could measure it. It's just not part of the basic panel that they do. So they usually, doctors will go with a basic panel or a more comprehensive one, but even the comprehensive one will not include the coenzyme Q10. However, there are tests that measure that. All they need to do is order it.
Huh.
And so I would just ask the doctor and say, look, I've done some research. It seems like that's a problem. Many times, you know, if you are super tired, you can say, well, it kind of lines up with my symptoms. Would you care to look at it? And most doctors will be like, sure, why don't we just throw that in? And they'll okay. order it.
Okay, thank you.
And depending on where you live, you know, we do have the ability to order some lab work that the doctors won't do. So if you get a no from the doctor, you do have options, depending on where you live.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Gina, I see your hand up again.
Since there's some slides that we didn't get to see, would it be possible for Mihaela to convert them to PDFs and upload them?
I was actually going to talk to our tech people and see what they need and see about getting corrected slides added in. Yes, it's okay. On my list.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you. They are very informative. Thank you.
Okay, anyone else have anything to say, to share?
One thing I was gonna say, if you guys want to dig deeper and look at them over-the-counter drugs, because a lot of times people do assume that over-the-counter drugs must be safe because they are over-the-counter, but that's not quite the case. And so I actually have an ebook. So if you want to go get the book, you can go to drugnutrients.com. And
if you want to put it in the chat, Mihaela, yeah, you can do yeah, that.
I can do that. And so you can dig deeper. Basically there, I'm addressing the aspirin, Tylenol, ibuprofen, and antacids, regular antacids like Maalox and Mylanta, and then the H2 blockers, which is like Pepcid. And the Protonix is the proton pump inhibitors. And so I'm discussing pretty much the same kind of stuff as here, except that for those drugs. So here it is.
Trish, were you raising your hand or just adjusting the computer? Okay. All right, cool. Great, thanks, Mihaela. So if you guys wanna grab that, now, while it's in the chat before we go. Catherine, I'm thinking your hand's up again.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Mihaela, what you just said about over-the-counter made me wonder, since I just bought some today. Your comments would be appreciated on like over-the-counter allergy meds, you know, like Allegra and Claritin and all those, mm-hmm. since so many people are on them.
Actually, on my website, I do have an article about that. So I'm addressing the Claritin with the Zyrtec, and they do have a list of side effects. So, and there's so many natural ways to deal with allergies that I would just leave those drugs for when nothing else works, basically. So, for example, high dose vitamin C acts as an antihistamine. So it cannot get any healthier than that. So, yeah. So I do take it sometimes. I do have some Claritin. But again, it's usually when I've done vitamin C, I've done other herbs that I have. And, you know, instead of getting sick, I prefer to just say, okay, let's take a dose of Claritin. But that's once in a blue moon.
Yeah. You probably throw it out more than you use it.
Yeah.
Cool, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, your last chance to ask Mihaela before we go. Anybody?
Oh, and my website is naturopathicpharmacist.com.
You can go ahead and put it in if you want.
Yeah. There's a blog thing there. And my website is in the making, so please excuse it. It will be much better soon. But
yeah, it sounds like mine. Anyway, thank you, Mihaela. This was great. It was really good. I will find out. You and I can talk later about the slide stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
I'll talk to, I think I know the person that puts the recordings on the page, and we'll see how they need them and all that. So I'll get that info to you.
Yeah. Yeah. It might be as a JPEG, because last year or in the spring when I gave this talk, Rita Marie had me do JPEG. So.
Okay. I'll find out and get back to you. All right. Mm-hmm. So if there's nothing else, I want to thank everybody for being here, and thank you to Mihaela very much.
My pleasure.
And, we'll see you on some call soon somewhere, I'm sure.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. And I'll stay till the end to make sure you guys can get those links if you want them. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I'll go get it ready for my other talk.
Yeah, go. I got it. Go.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Oops. Oh, Annette, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
So I missed that event that happened yesterday, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And they said I could find it in Biocanic. I don't remember seeing anything like that in there.
I put a note in Biocanic a couple weeks ago with the Zoom link info.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be, as you're looking at Biocanic on your screen, down the right side, there's those messages boxes. It should be there. And then a couple hours ago, I put the
recording
for this call.
I saw that you put something in, but I mean, on my email, but.
Yeah. So it's there now too.
Okay. Thanks. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out what's where, and it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. It's, and the Biocanic's new to us this year.
Yeah.
So, right. It's a learning curve for all of us.
Okay.
Sorry we missed you. I will give the people, we have a group of six, and three made it and three didn't. So you can go ahead and listen to the introductions that the rest of us had.
Okay.
And I will be allowing, you know, you make it next month, you'll get the same amount of time to introduce yourself.
Oh, okay. Sounds good.
To be honest, you really didn't miss much. Really. Oh. Don't. It's not like I shared earth-shattering information. It was really a getting to know you call, getting to know the coaches, doing some housework type chores. It was, you know, it really, if you were going to miss one, this is the one to miss.
Okay. But I'm going to watch it anyway. So I get.
Yeah. Go right ahead. Fast forward through the parts that you're like, oh. But okay. Yes, it's there. And hopefully we get, they're working hard to get the reminder system correct for next month. But
right, that's been very crazy. Not just that one, but others.
So. Oh, I know. I know.
Okay, thanks so much.
You're welcome. Nice to meet you, though.
Yeah, you too. I look forward to seeing you next month.
Yeah, we'll be there. We'll see you then. All right, bye-bye. Doug is, okay. Doug, did you need anything? You're muted. Okay, I'm going to guess you just walked away. So I'm going to go ahead and shut the call down. And you have a good evening, Doug. Bye-bye.